From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is Mickey Kellerman, synth expert and keyboardist for Chicago's Powertronica trio, Future Rock. Blending hard-nosed electro with maxed-out synths and pounding bass, Future Rock has been blazing their own trail across the country for the better part of the past decade. Last month, they released their EP, Nights, for free, and this weekend, Future Rock will be ushering the much-anticipated Summer Camp Festival with their annual late night set in the Red Barn, literally a barn burner. Today's show is brought to you by Wakarusa Festival and Interstellar Meltdown, presented by Cicada Rhythm, taking place June 2nd through the 5th in Ozark, Arkansas. You can catch acts like STS9, Thievery Corporation, Bass Nectar, Skrillex, Spangle, and Ott on the Interstellar Sanctum stage, and sunrise sets from Take, Emancipator, and Vibe Squad. Find schedules and details online at wakarusa.com and interstellarmeltdown.com. Okay, let's get to the interview. Pretty much everything that fans know about Future Rock is that it's an intense, late-night experience for dancers and sweaters, and the band is just a part of the fabric of the city of Chicago. But beyond that, not much is known about you guys. Tell me more about your story. What were you listening to as a kid? Were you a serious musician, or is it something you picked up so you had a rational excuse to party all the time?
Well, I did actually take piano lessons growing up. I don't know if I would go as far as saying I was serious about it. I think I was for the first few years I took lessons, but kind of started slacking on it. And then got back into playing when I got into high school, but didn't really do much like performance, and I didn't go to college to study music or anything like that. It wasn't really till I got into like the second half of college that I started playing, you know, and performing out. I actually met Felix at Northwestern. Him and I met like when I was a junior, and got together and started a different band. And that was kind of the origin of us playing together.
Tell me about that first project you were in.
It was actually called CDO, and it was much more of, I think, the idea behind it. We had another buddy who really started it. The idea was that we were just going to be like a Fish Grateful Dead cover band. Mm-hmm. And then we actually just started writing some original material. That band was like not really electronic at all. It was much more, prog rock based. And to, get back to what you asked before though, as far as like what I was listening to growing up, I mean, I really listened to, mostly like pop and rock. I mean, I listened to like Pearl Jam, Nirvana, all those like grunge bands. That was like right when I was, you know, starting to buy CDs and get into music. Definitely listen to like Pink Floyd, Zeppelin, all the stereotypical classic rock stuff I guess you're supposed to when you're growing up.
Sure, sure.
And I didn't really get into electronic music at all until I was in college.
When you and Felix were in this sort of proto-jam group, were you sharing the music that you were both listening to at home? Were you saying, hey, I'm listening to this new electronic stuff, you know, or were you trading CDs and figuring out what it was that you were really trying to do? Or did you not have any concept that you wanted to push your sound further than what you were already doing?
Well, I think we actually came to it separately. I think Felix really probably got into electronic music maybe before I did, but I never really talked to him about it. Really, the way I did was I took this class called Electronic Music Systems when I was in college, and it they taught us how to use synthesizers. They actually had like an ARP 2600, which is like one of the original analog synths, and it has like patch cables and all that jazz, and we had to learn how to use it. And once I started using it, I got really fascinated by synthesizers. And then I remember like there was a few albums I was listening to at the time where all of a sudden I heard like synths in it, and kind of it was just like a light bulb went off for me. And so then I kind of went out and sought out as much electronic stuff as I could. I remember like specifically I heard Daft Punk Homework for the first time, and I was like, got really excited about it and told Felix, and he started laughing at me. He's like, dude, I heard that like 4 years ago.
Tell me how Darren Heights got pulled into the mix, and how did you guys gracefully escape your other act?
Well, the guy who started our first band graduated, and he moved out to California, so that it kind of ended naturally. The guy who was the drummer in that band started out drumming with Future Rock for like 1 year, or maybe it might have even been less than a year, but he kind of went in a different direction as well. And we had like a 6 month period where we were searching for a drummer, and some buddies of ours in a band, another band in Chicago called 1000 Vertical Feet, they actually used to rehearse in the same rehearsal space as Darren, and they knew we were looking for a drummer, so they told him to give us a call. And we had like tried out a few other guys. Nothing was really working out very well. And Darren came over, and I mean, literally, I would say within like 15 seconds of him starting to play, we were like, oh, this is our drummer.
Yeah, let's take a second to talk about Darren. He was one of the first live electronic drummers I saw during the formative years of both my drumming and ostensibly my first forays into Livetronica, which was at Future Rock shows. The thing I took away from watching him play was that I should quit, and there is no hope for me. The man is a tireless machine, and to watch him move seamlessly from organic drums to pads to triggering samples without dropping a beat or even really stopping for hours on end is both frustrating and a little bit disgusting.
He has some kind of innate natural ability that I don't think most people are born with. I try not to even start to understand how he does some of the stuff he does, but you know, I remember in that first, when he came and tried out, he didn't even bring any like acoustic drums with him. He literally just brought like a drum pad and a looping station, like one of those RC-20 Roland looping stations, or RC-10, mm-hmm. I forget what it is. And so he was like looping electronic beats on the fly perfectly in time. That was like the thing that just kind of blew Felix and I away. So, I mean, right away, he brought a completely new element to our band that hadn't even been there before. But yeah, I mean, he has incredible time, and he brings, he is just a huge classic rock, prog rock fan. And he brings, you know, a great energy, rock energy to our band. But at the same time, you know, he loves electronic music as well. And he was able, I think, to really get us to where we wanted to be in terms of having that fusion of, you know, hard rock and like electronic dance music.
We'll be right back.
I don't know what that is. It's $5 signs in a row, so it's either money or dollar bill.
I wonder when the Future Rock project was first conceived, and this might have been even before Darren was in the mix, what sort of understanding did you guys have about the project itself? Did you at any point sit down and say, this is what we're going to do, or did you more or less let it happen organically? Did you say, we are going to take the dance, synth, proggy, you know, harder edge of house and electronic music, and we're going to bring that into the live setting? Did you have any, you know, big theories about what the project would be, or did it just happen?
Well, I'll say this. I mean, the idea from the very beginning, and I do like give us credit for this. I mean, we really have kind of stayed true to the original idea from what we started out to do, which was rock and roll fused with electronic dance music. We only set one rule for ourselves, and we have stayed true to that. And the only rule we had was absolutely no guitars.
And you've done that. You've done that successfully.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I don't even think we don't usually have like guest musicians on stage, but we've even never have had a guitarist guest on stage. So 100% we have stayed true to our original concept.
I wonder how you feel about this. Recently, it came out that the seminal Livetronica trio, the New Deal, was hanging it up after 12 years. They've got the same instrumentation as you. You've played shows together. I wonder what that band means to you, and sort of the absence of that band. What do you feel your role is, maybe even to fill that vacuum that is left by such a huge force in the industry?
Sure. Well, let me talk about them for a second because, well, first of all, I absolutely love that band. I love those guys. I've had a chance to become friends with them over the years. They were humongous influences on us. I remember Felix and I went and saw a show of theirs. I probably was back in 2003 at the Abbey Pub in Chicago. And I mean, literally, my jaw was on the floor. I'd never seen him before. I just was absolutely amazed. Now, as far as filling their void, I don't think it can be filled because they do something better and different than any other band I've ever seen. And I just really don't think there's a band who could pull off what they do. I mean, their show is mostly improvised to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really, I mean, we do some improvisation, but I would say we're like on the opposite end of the spectrum. A lot of our shows scripted, and they're just so talented at playing that prog house. I mean, I still to this day, like when I see them, just am blown away and amazed at how they're able to have such great time and such. The groove is just so tight, and I'm honestly sad and disappointed. I mean, I totally understand. It's obviously their prerogative, and they got to move on with their lives, and they have the reasons for hanging it up. But I think, like a lot of their fans and a lot of people out there, you know, I'm disappointed I'm not gonna get to see them anymore.
Obviously, due to your several tribute performances, you have a great respect and a debt of gratitude to acts like Daft Punk and Aphex Twin. Were there any other acts you were really trying to emulate or at least bring into the Livetronic environment during those early years?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Felix and I were listening to a lot of the Warp Records guys when we first got it started. So, I mean, Boards of Canada was another huge influence, although, I mean, we don't really play, like, that super down-tempo style too often. But listened to a lot of Warp Records stuff, and I really just tried to listen to as much electronic music as I possibly could get my hands on over the years, and that's kind of been my approach to this day. Although I would say back when we started, I was focusing more on the electronic stuff, just because there was so much I'd never heard that there was a ton to listen to. Now I just try to listen to as much different stuff as I possibly can.
Early on in your career, you recorded Sugar-Coated Bullets. That was in 2006, and then followed that up quite quickly again with 2007's Gears. What sort of evolution did your sound undergo that caused you to take a stab at studio work once again, you know, with such a short time period in between?
Yeah, well, I mean, so Sugar-Coated Bullets, what we tried to do, the idea was to make a studio, an album that sounded completely different than what we sounded like live. We wanted it to be all pure studio. We didn't use any live drums on that. It was all programmed on a computer. And then we finished that, and we're like, man, that was a terrible idea. the reason I say that is because then we had this product that didn't represent what we sounded like live whatsoever.
Which had become, I imagine at that point, what you were all about. I mean, Future Rock is, yeah, to this day, a live band, and that's what they do.
Yeah, exactly. And so then Gears were like, all right, now we want to make an album that sounds as close to what we sound like live as possible. And then we did that. And I love both the albums, don't get me wrong, and I think Gears turned out great. But I think what we felt like after Gears was, well, maybe we went a little bit too far in trying to sound like we do live and didn't really strike a balance between studio and live. And then we took a few years, or I guess it was like 3 years, between when we finished Gears and when we just did Nights. And I think the reason for that is we didn't, you know, for the first two albums, we did everything, 100% of it, all ourselves. We had absolutely no outside help. Our manager, Leif, who is also a very, very talented sound engineer, and he recorded and mixed and mastered both the first two albums. And we, you know, as we kept, you know, over the years talking about, well, what do we want to do in the next album, the thing that kept coming up over and over again is like, you know what? We have some limitations on what we know how to do from a production standpoint. We need someone else to come in and maybe help us to get our product to where we want it to be.
From Future Rock's latest EP, Nights. Let's go ahead and talk about your latest EP, Nights, which was just released a couple of months ago. The first thing I notice about it is that the very first cut, Ode to a Droid, starts off characteristically Future Rock with a very upbeat, major key, catchy synth run, but then you drop into some darkness. Tell me about how audiences have reacted to you throwing in some dubstep, not only on the studio product, but also in your live show, I imagine.
Well, I would say that, like, there are definitely some other tracks that we play live, that we've been playing live for years, that have, I wouldn't say they're dubstep per se, but they're that same tempo and that same feel. Mm-hmm. And that section in Ode to a Droid that you're talking about, yeah, we did have that. And that was kind of an interesting discussion back and forth, deciding whether to leave that in or not, that part. But yeah, that's definitely the most dubsteppy type or part that we have in any song we've done. But it's been going over great. I mean, that song has absolutely been killing it live. People have really been taking to it. And You know, that's what's fresh and hot right now. So I don't think that necessarily people come to our shows expecting to see dubstep per se, but I think certainly that not. People do are definitely receptive to it for sure.
And what was behind your decision to bring in Jennifer Hartswick and Michael Harrisonberg of Van Ghost in for Spark and Nights, respectively? Is it a Chicago thing? I mean, these guys are used to doing Americana and alt country. How did you know it would work in your setting?
Well, I mean, we definitely didn't know ahead of time that it would work. For both of those tracks, well, first of all, Jennifer and Mike are two of our best friends. I mean, I've known both of them for a really long time. I mean, Berg, even I think I've known him since like early 2000s. So we've been friends for forever. And I know for the track Nights that he sings on, we had this instrumental song that Felix wrote, and it didn't feel like it was finished. It needed something else. And so he was like, well, maybe I'll just send it over to Mike and see what he can do. And then Mike wrote the lyrics to it and wrote the vocal part and sent it back, and we just loved it. And it actually, the original version that he sent over, it went through a few more iterations before it got to the final arrangement that we have on the album. And Dave Najarian, who helped produce Nights, the whole album, he made some changes to the arrangement and did some different production things. And so that final version that's on the album is really like everyone kind of throwing in their different ideas together. And I think the final product turned out really well. We're all really happy with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to take a step back and talk about your live show again. It seems like Future Rock is really the most suitable band to take on today's progressive house and electro, that sort of fuzzy and warm sidechain, four on the floor, womp, womp, womp sound that seems just perfectly suited to your live aesthetic. Has your show always been about creating that almost humid wall of sound?
Yeah, I mean, even from the very beginning, well, you know, Felix has loop stations on stage. Darren used to have more than he has now, I think. But the original, like, when we first started playing, there was so much looping of sound. I mean, that was always the idea, is you have three guys up on stage, but you create this very intense wall of sound that with that dance beat behind it, which is what kind of gives the show its energy. I think that over the years, we've become more dynamic of a band. So I wouldn't necessarily say that every song is that in your face as it used to be. It's just, you know, something that happens when you mature. But yeah, I mean, that was always kind of the original intention, was having that wall of sound.
Tell me about that Live in Wicker Park show that became your big official live production. Mm-hmm. Did you have the album in mind going into it, or did it just become an over-the-top extravaganza that you had no choice but to release it as such?
Well, we actually had another show that we had recorded like a few weeks before that. We knew we had to do a live album. We did not plan ahead of time for that Wicker Park set to be the live album per se. We did put a lot of time and effort into planning out that set, just because we knew it was going to be a huge show. And I think it still might be the biggest show we've played. It was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had in my life. It was crazy. All of Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago was completely packed as far as the eye could see. And, I think we played real well. And when we listened back to the recording after, it just was obvious to us that was what we wanted to release, because it was just such a great representation of where we were as a band at that point in time.
And speaking of humidity, we should probably bring up Summer Camp, which is coming up this weekend. Your late night Thursday slot has become the official start of the weekend for years now. It's a sweaty, soupy mess in that barn. What have you got planned for this year? I mean, you have to go absolutely over the top once again.
Well, we plan, I think we're going to have the biggest light rig that we've ever had before at that Thursday night set this year. So it's going to be probably the most over the top set we'll have played ever, I would imagine. I mean, I think, you know, I think this is our fourth year in a row playing
something like that.
And, you know, people have a certain expectation at this point that we're going to bring it.
And it's confusing because you don't know what's going on in there. There's like condensation dripping off the walls. There's so much fog in there. And then, you know, here's Daedalus and here's Orchard Lounge. And then suddenly Future Rock rises out of the fog like the Phantom of the Opera. It's frightening almost.
Well, I hope it's not too frightening. But I think at this point people I'm sure there's a lot of people who are going to come to the festival this year who have never been there before and are going to end up in that barn on Thursday night and have absolutely no idea what's going on. But that's great. I mean, I love playing in front of new people. But I think there'll be a lot of people there who know exactly what they're getting themselves into. For me, summer camp really is that Memorial Day weekend's one of my favorite weekends of the entire year.
I mean, it's got to be your thing, right? It's such like home because it is such a Chicago event, even though it's, you know, hundreds of miles out of the city. Does it feel like home for you? I mean, you're saying that's your official kickoff of the summer almost.
Yeah, it is. It's the first big festival of the summer, and a ton of people from Chicago come down. I mean, it does really feel like a hometown festival, even though it's outside of Chicago. But I have so many friends. We all have so many friends all over the Midwest, and everyone kind of comes to that festival, and so we get to hang out with, you know, so many friends there, and have such a fun time. And I also appreciate the fact that they let the bands play more than one set at the festival. So not only do we play on Thursday late night, but we get to do an late afternoon set on Saturday from 5 to 6 p.m. as well. So people who are, you know, who may not be able to make it for the Thursday pre-party will still get to see us play on Saturday. I think that's a great thing for that they do.
Well, I'll be seeing you in the barn. I'll have my Lycra bike shorts and probably a camelback and something else, to maybe like a heat suit or something to keep me flame retardant.
Nice.
Mickey Kellerman, thanks so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Thanks, Anand. I appreciate it, man.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the UNS Podcast. Special thanks go to Leif Moravi with Viking Management, and of course, my guest, Mickey Kellerman. Future Rock's EP, Nights, is available as a free download from futurerock.bandcamp.com. You can catch the boys sweating it up at the barn late night Thursday at summer camp, or during the day on Saturday. Mickey Kellerman will also be joining UNS compadre Willis for a special New York Hustler Ensemble performance late night Friday at the Vibe Tent. The UNS will also be at summer camp. I'll be there along with senior contributor Natty Morrison. We'll have interviews during the day and shenanigans all night. Come by, say hi, check out the interview schedule, and sign up for contests on site. Next week, Take will be featured on the UNS podcast. Take, aka Sweats and Clank, has been a fixture in LA's beat scene for almost a decade. His latest album, Only Mountain, was released last year on Alpha Pup Records. Take will be performing a sunrise set at next weekend's Wakarusa Festival. Once again, the DJ at Sonic Bloom contest is up and running at theUNS.com. We have over 50 finalists for you to choose from, so please be patient as the loading times are a little long. Choose your favorite artist, and the top three finishers after June 3rd will win the last three spots at Sonic Bloom, taking place the last weekend in June in Georgetown, Colorado. Very quickly, we have free tickets to give away for Flux Pavilion, Dr. P, and Designer Drugs at the Congress Theater on June 11th, two Borgore dates, and just added Underground Sound 7 in Cave in Rock, Illinois. And of course, you can still win festival passes to Camp Barefoot 5, Liberate Vermont, The Blast Off, and Electric Forest Festival later this summer. Visit theUNS.com/contests to sign up. Remember to visit theUNS.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theUNS.com. That's ANAND @theUNS.com. Catch you next week.